Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
We got Nathaniel Hackett at the podium, live from Rookie Minicamp.
You go back and check it, it's amazing to see how much he was around him. So he has a very great knack for getting to the passer, and just kind of whenever a quarterback feels that guy around him, always gives him the ibbities. So I'm excited to see that now with us, and we'll start teaching him some new techniques. And it's day by day. We know what he could do in college, but now he's going to go against some better players, and we'll have to just continually develop him.
What is that? What does he bring to this group?
Have you seen his hair? Just watching him out here, flowing in the wind. It was great to see him out here and run routes. I mean, he can really run. I mean, and he's in great shape. You can see that. And even being over here with some of the blocking drills, you can see that he's definitely a willing blocker. So I think it's kind of that all-purpose guy. I think that's going to be something that's going to be very valuable to us.
A lot of intrigue around Montrell Washington. And then you see him around rookies, a lot of these kids that play Power 5. How did he look first glance?
Yeah, it's first day. It's one of those things, he had some really good tape and some of those old stuff. I'm biased to those small school guys because I think in the end it's just that mentality and how you approach it every single day. And I'm excited to get to know him and see what he can do.
There's obviously a lot of focus on the guys that were drafted, but you guys brought in quite a few undrafted guys. And there's a history here of, one guy usually makes the 53. What do you like about the undrafted guys that you guys brought in?
That's a great point. The undrafted guys. I mean, it's funny. I go back all throughout my career, and there's always guys that end up, even starting for you. I look at Alan Hearns and Alan Lazard, and you look at Lucas Patrick. There's so many different guys that come in and they make a difference for your football team. And there's a lot of guys on each team, so somebody, as they start developing and showing themselves up through training camp, they might have an opportunity to play. So right now I think it's a little bit early. We just had the first day, almost like a phase two day, but I think there's a lot of good potential out there, but potential is not anything until you get the pads on and you get to actually do some stuff. So we'll see where that goes within time. But hey, whoever the best guys are, that's who we want out on the field.
Aside from the learning, well, not the learning curve, but just learning how to become a professional, what is the biggest challenge that most of these guys face from the level that they play, immediately being able to hit the ground running as a pro?
That's a great question. I think all people across the board, they look at football as, hey, from going from high school to college to NFL, and obviously the level, the speed changes a little bit, but the mental that these guys have to face is something that I don't think anybody could ever understand until you're in the room and you have a coach get up in front of you, and now after all these years telling you one thing to do it to now you change everything from technique to the different coverages or front structures or from an offensive standpoint. Heck, a lot of these guys have never been in a huddle before. So, I think there's so many different things. I've been with some quarterbacks that, the first day they go out in preseason was the first time they ever took a snap under center in a real live game, in a preseason game. So, there are so many things. And it doesn't even count all the stuff that surrounds them on the outside of these gates. There are so many different things to understand to be a pro, but I would say the system is just unbelievable. It's so much more advanced. We see so much more. In college, it's very basic, and some people are a little bit intricate, but for us, every single week, the picture changes. Every week you face a different defense, different skill players, different defensive players that are talented. So, there's just so much, and they've got a lot to learn.
I saw something where you mentioned you don't like to go out on Friday if you even have an East Coast trip because Friday's family.
Now, yes.
Why is that important for the coach staff at the pro level to have that kind of time set aside?
Yeah, I was lucky growing up with my father. My father was home every Friday night. That was our family night. And, that meant a lot to me as a kid. I got four kids. I got a wife. And to have that opportunity to be able to spend, some time with them and take my wife out on a date is so, so huge. And, it's a long season. 18 weeks now. I still don't get used to saying 18 weeks. But it's so long, and we spend so much time when we're away from our family during that time. So it's like, as, I am a head football coach, but I'm also a father. I'm also a husband. So I have to be true to that, and I want the guys, all the coaches to feel that way. So I think it's so important to have that family time.
Training camp, they've kind of gotten away from everyone, bunkering together.
Those were the good days. I remember when I was a kid and used to stay in those dorms with all those players.
Yeah.
Wow, we had a lot of fun.
Do the veterans still get to live at home? And how are you going to do that?
Yeah, we're still working that stuff out. You know, I mean, I'm going back and forth on that, especially because, you know, last year, the COVID stuff, a lot of people, you know, at least for us in Green Bay, was a little bit different. But I think it's about the team. I think it's about where the team is at. And I think there is some really good value to putting guys in, you know, whether it be a hotel or a dorm together, any of those things, because it does create unity. And those guys get to hang out with each other and get to know each other, because that's what makes a great team. So I think we're just kind of in the process of figuring that out right now, but we'll see. All right, y'all, appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that was new Broncos head coach Nathaniel Hackett speaking live from the podium at Rookie Minicamp. We're already here. It's one of these other benchmarks, you know, in the NFL calendar. You get through free agency, pre-draft, combine, have the draft, and you get the schedule release, and now all of a sudden these rookies are here in Denver.
Yeah, I want to thank our listeners in Brighton for making 104.3 the Fan part of your day.
Brighton, stand up.
Listen to Nathaniel Hackett. How can you not really like the guy? That's kind of what I take away from just listening to him. He's refreshing. It might wear on you at a certain point, but I really like him. I think he's got the right perspective. We'll see how it goes.
Broncos traveling on Saturdays now, so guys can be home with their families on Friday night. That's a little bit of a departure from past couple years.
Well, I don't think they traveled on Friday every away game.
Did they switch it up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they did go out on Friday a couple times, but I think the majority was leaving on Saturday.
Okay.
We did it with John Fox, and I've talked a lot about it, how we, because most teams I was on, that's what you do. That's the norm for the most part, unless you're traveling all the way from east to west coast. Maybe you'll leave on a Friday. But with John Fox, we would, I think, you know, out of eight of our away games, I think six of them we left on Friday, and I absolutely loved it.
Okay.
Loved it. Loved getting to a place early and kind of just getting, you just felt not as rushed and more comfortable.
Nick Benito, who was the Broncos' first draft pick, the outside linebacker out of Oklahoma, he's up at the podium. Let's just eavesdrop here for a minute or two.
Being a great pass rusher, you know, being a great guy when it comes to, you know, dropping in coverage and all those things. So
they took us behind the scenes when you got actually drafted. You were on the phone. You were really emotional. We didn't kind of know that when we had talked to you before. What was that moment like? Why did it hit you so hard?
Yeah, it was just one of those things where, you know, you're kind of knowing, like, you know, where, you know, you have a range to where you feel like you're going to be going in the draft, and then it was kind of getting towards that point where, like, I was past my range. So, you know, I was kind of just, like, on the fence of where I'm going. And then I knew this was a place where, you know, I came here. It was special on my visit. You know, I connected with the coaches and all the guys upstairs really well. And, you know, I kind of had a feeling that, you know, when it got to Denver, they may have took me. So just when I got that phone call, I told myself I was going to cry. But, like, it kind of just, like, all came out, so. It was a real special moment for sure.
Nick, what's been like so far working with Coach Watts? I know your former D-line coach, Coach Kane, worked with him at Fresno State, told him you were going to, you know, you guys would get along well. What's been your impression the first couple weeks getting to know him?
Real cool guy, knows a lot of ball for sure. Just a good teacher of the game. You know, he's going to teach you every aspect of the game, in the run game, in the pass game, when you've been rushing the passer, so... He's just trying to, for me, just honing on the little things right now, trying to get me better with the fundamentals right now. And then as time goes on, when we start getting with the other guys, he's going to start progressing. You know, a couple of guys are with me right now along. So.
Nick, as a top pick in this class, how much do you try to take on a leadership role with these guys?
Yeah, there's definitely a leadership role that, you know, that kind of gets, you know, demanded out of me. But, you know, I feel like, you know, my best trait when it comes to my leadership is just, you know, me doing the right things, you know, me coming to work every day, guys seeing me as an example of, you know, how I'm doing on the field, my body language, how I approach the meeting room and things of that nature. So,
are you looking forward to getting your hands on?
All of them.
Good. Thank you, Nick.
Good.
All right, that's Nick Benito, the Broncos' top pick in this past year's draft. Really, just a couple weeks ago, he was picked in the 32nd pick of the second round. So, a couple things that we can talk about Nick Benito on. We'll circle back to it though. I think we may hear from Greg Dulcich, the tight end from UCLA as well. Maybe we can eavesdrop a minute or two on that. But in the meantime, as we look at the Broncos schedule, what is the most winnable game on the schedule, and which is the toughest task other than on the road at Kansas City? We'll take a dive into that conversation coming up next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
Broncos schedule came out last night. Lots of juicy details, and we've talked about it pretty expansively, but we're really going to take a dive into it and go through and do the super efficient and always trustworthy win-loss, win-win-loss, loss-win-win-loss, and come up with a Broncos record. And it wasn't too long ago that James Merrillat was picking the Broncos to go 10-6 or 10-10. What was it, James? Didn't you pick the Broncos to be 10-6 2 years ago, I think?
Yeah.
Up. We'll get him here in a second.
There we go.
There he is.
There we go. It's two times in a row I've been in this chair, and everybody looks at me like I'm not pushing the button right.
Well, you need to hit the on button.
He's right there. I got her. See, you're looking at me like I'm not doing it right. It was 2 years ago that I had him 10-6.
That's right.
Then Stoke fell for it this past year, had him 10-7.
In a major way.
I learned my lesson, had him 6-11.
No need to bring me into this conversation.
Normally, it was organic.
Normally, I like to make my pick like 6 minutes into the first day of training camp.
Yes, which was hysterical this past year. Literally at the first water break, you said, I've seen enough, 6-10, or 6-11.
Got him within a game. I just got back from rookie minicamp.
How was that?
It was good. It was good. It's fun to see guys out there. Dulcich was someone who certainly popped. Like, you didn't need to have a roster. Didn't need to know anything. You'd just be like, that guy's at a different level.
Will Peterson texted me that. He said he looks like a man amongst boys.
Yeah, he did. He looked great. And they're moving out there with no defense and no pads. But
sure.
He certainly looked the part.
Love it.
Montrell Washington, that guy's got quickness, right? Not only just speed, but just his ability to change direction. Because they're doing a lot of drills. So you watch him go through the drills and then the other receivers, like, all right, he's at a different level with some of those things.
And just for, you know, our fans who aren't in the trenches of the, you know, NFL draft, he was the 5th round pick. He was the 19th pick of the 5th round, a wide receiver out of Division II Samford.
So he looked good. And then there were some first-year guys out there. And the other person that just kind of jumped out to me was Seth Williams. And partially because all the other receivers were kind of little guys. And he's out there and he's 6'3", and he's just like, man.
He's a wide receiver from Auburn, right?
Yep. Rookie last year.
Yep.
And I thought he looked good. Didn't get a chance to see Benito. The defense was kind of on the far, far corner. And they were just going through some drills. So it was kind of hard to really see what they were doing anyway. But those were the three guys that sort of popped. So made me feel good. You know, I'm feeling like it's an 11-win team after that.
Love it.
Oh, there we go. Love it. What's the who's throwing on the football?
It was, they had one quarterback.
Okay.
I'm going to screw up his name. Barriere, just a free agent tryout guy. That was it. Wearing number 15.
Do we know where he's from?
He's from Eastern Washington.
Okay.
Eric Barriere, not the only number 15 we've ever seen out there throw errant passes. He was a little all over the place.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. But he was, you know, having to throw every single pass. They actually had some coaches step in and finally throw some because they only had one quarterback out there. But, you know, it was fun to just see some guys out there, see them in person, see how they, you know, kind of move around and kind of get things going. It was good.
What did you make of the Jerry Jeudy news yesterday? I know you had a chance to react to it with Tyler, but I'm interested here in your take now that we have like some, not like ultimate clarity on what it's going to be. Will there be a suspension or anything like that? But from what we know, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's never good to be in the news for that kind of thing, right? Or for anything that you're spending the night in jail, that's not good by any means. I think if you had the spectrum of what it could be, from absolute worst possible scenario to the most minor, it's closer to the left side of that, the most minor side of that. I don't want to downplay it at all, but when you start hearing it and you're hearing the details and it sounds a little bit like, you know, she stole some stuff and he stole some stuff or kept some stuff and it'll all come out in the wash. But when you initially heard domestic violence, it makes you go to a different place in terms of your thought.
Sure.
And the sheriff's office yesterday, it almost felt like they had their press conference just to clarify that it didn't fall into anything physical and into that category. That was reiterated today. So that puts it, you know, more on that. Okay, I think it's less severe. But look, anytime there's an arrest and anytime there's sort of a situation and it's, you know, falls into those categories, it's certainly not a good thing. But it sounds terrible to say, but I guess you look at it and go, man, it really could have been a lot worse when we were first getting the information about it. So hopefully it's something that, you know, doesn't turn into a huge distraction and a huge deal for him to deal with.
What was your biggest takeaway from the schedule reveal last night?
I think they got the worst possible opportunity or time to go to Seattle. I think if you get them, I think if you drew a graph of percentage chance to win at Seattle, the further you go into the season, the higher the percentage. If you play them in week 18, I think it's a 98% chance you win there. Seattle season will be done. The fans will have, you know, turned on John Schneider or Pete Carroll or whoever they think is the bad guy. Week one, Russell Wilson is going to be, not to everybody, but to a bigger percentage than at any other time, the bad guy. And week one, you know, when you're picking games, that's a crapshoot. You see Jacksonville win week one and then lose the next 15 games.
Right.
Anything can happen in week one. And that is going to be Seattle's Super Bowl for the fans, for Drew Locke, for Pete Carroll.
Smith.
You got all training camp and preseason to prepare for that game versus, hey, you have, you know, 6 days to get ready for it. So that was my number one takeaway, was I thought that was the worst possible time to get that game. I get why they're doing it. The NFL's smart. It's a great marketing decision. But and then a lot of primetime games early makes me wonder, is the NFL worried that this team's not going to be as relevant as the season goes along?
What?
That's
where your mind goes? That's where your interpretation?
I just said they're going to win 11 games. I don't think that. That's just where my mind went.
Okay. Yeah, no, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think it's because it's so new, Russell Wilson quarterbacking the Broncos, I think there's an emphasis to put that guy on the league's front porch as early as possible because it's new. You can go through these other scenarios like these other great quarterbacks and Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers and Dak and all of them, but We've seen them play over and over again in those uniforms. Isn't it amazing, though, year over year? James, we sat here last year and talked about the Monday Night Football streak of 32 years being broken.
Yeah.
The Broncos got one obligatory game. Now you got Thursday night, you got two Sunday nights, you got two Monday nights, you're in the international game, you're playing on Christmas Day. 7 of the 17 games for the Broncos will be played in standalone. The stage is yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. It just shows you what one guy can change, really. I mean,
and it ain't Nathaniel Hackett.
Right. Now, that's a major upgrade, and the guy's never coached a game, and I still feel comfortable saying it's a major upgrade. And I think they would have been better this year just with that. But, yeah, Russell Wilson makes them relevant. And that's been the biggest thing with this team. You know, we've said it a lot. Hey, they've been bad and they've been boring. That's here in Denver. Nationally, they've just been irrelevant. Just
like in the blind spot. There's no opinion on you.
Right, right. It's like some of those throwaway teams, you know, the Bengals in the past. We didn't spend a lot of time thinking about the Bengals.
No.
Nobody cared.
No.
The Broncos had kind of fallen into that category for people who live elsewhere. They're now relevant nationally, and they're not going to be bad, and they're not going to be boring here locally, which it's 180 degrees. It's amazing.
And you know what it is? There's now an identifiable face with the Broncos. We had these conversations. Who goes on the marquee? Who do you put up on the graphic?
Who's on the billboard?
The safety? Like, as great as Justin Simmons is, like, do people in Newark, New Jersey know Justin Simmons if he walked right past them? Probably not, unless you're a hardcore fan. Russell Wilson gets stopped in every city in America walking down the street. So I just think we got a franchise quarterback, but there's cachet. It's sexy. It's new. And I think we got, told that by the league last night.
Yeah, I do think, though, that it's not coincidental that the majority of their primetime games are in the first half of the season. I mean, I think the league looks at that and says, well, we know for a fact that the Broncos are going to be a big story coming out of the gate. You know it, right, with Russell Wilson. But it's a first-year head coach. It's less of a known thing that they'll be relevant in the second half of the year. I think the league probably thinks they will be. I think we all think they will be, but it's less known than the first half. You know they're going to be a big story the first 7-8 weeks of the year, all the way up until the London game. You just based on the fact of Russell Wilson's here and you want to see how that goes, that's why it's a front-loaded primetime slate.
Well, it is front-loaded. Three of the first five games are in primetime. Week number one is Monday Night Football. My guess is it'll bookend it in this season. First game in primetime and your last game against the Chargers flexed into primetime for an eighth standalone game. That's just my guess. Quick, did you want to
look at that? I also think they caught a break with when they get Indianapolis here, right? It's a Thursday night home game, so Indianapolis has to travel, and it's a short week. That's going to be a good football team. That's a nice break that not a lot of people are talking about because it's not a divisional game. But if you start looking at, hey, home field and playoff seating and things like that, that's a nice break early in the year.
And they play a physical Tennessee Titans team the very week before.
Yeah.
So just a footnote into that conversation as well. James, thanks for your time, and we'll hear you at the top of the hour.
Appreciate it.
All right. It's time for the most fruitless exercise on the sports calendar, and we can't wait to do it. Brandon Stokely goes through the schedule and assigns wins and losses for the Broncos. Buckle up. It's next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
The NFL schedule came out last night, and it's time for the always accurate, mostly perfect exercise of going through the Denver Broncos schedule and assigning wins and losses. It's definitely going to fall this way, the way that Stokely has it.
Yeah.
You got your notebook open.
Yep. I'm ready to go.
Here we go, man.
I'm here for it. Okay, we ready? I don't know what this adds up to be. I didn't do the total, like, okay, well, they're finishing 12-5 or 8-9. I didn't do that. So I just did win-loss, and then when I'm done, let me know what the total is.
Okay.
Okay, first game at Seattle. That's a W. That's a W. That's a win.
It's got to be.
Got to be. It's the Seattle Seahawks. Right, Russell's returning. You got big storylines all over the place. Geno, Drew, who's it going to be? It doesn't matter. You're opening with a win at Seattle. And I don't know if I quite agree with Marillette that that's like the worst time to play Seattle. I think it would be better if they played them, you know, maybe middle of the season, if they've, you know, lost four in a row or something. But at the same time, I look at it as, well, you know, if it's Drew Locke, I mean, this is going to be his first start there, right? And if it's Geno Smith. It's Geno Smith. Exactly. So it's a win, though, regardless. Next game, at home, Houston Texans. That's a win. It's got to be a win. And that's, I mean, that's not even debatable. So I got you starting 2-0, okay? Nice start to the season.
Love it.
Now you got the 49ers at home. That's going to be a tough one.
That's, I think, Sunday Night Football.
Sunday Night Football, I think the Broncos lose their first game of the year at home against the San Francisco 49ers.
To Trey Lance?
Yes, yes. You heard me?
All right.
Okay. They are now 2-1. Now, you already know what's going to happen in week four. Okay. You know, I know, we all know that we will be traveling to Vegas. That will be an easy win for the Broncos. The Broncos are now at 3-1. Now, we got the Colts coming to our place. And Marillette made a good point. They are on a short week. It's a Thursday night football game. And the week before you brought up, they are playing a physical Tennessee Titans game. That's set up to win. You're the home team. You got to take care of business. And the Broncos do take care of business there. Now they are 4-1. Next game, on the road, Chargers. I got that as a loss. A very good Chargers team.
That's Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football. That's a loss. Now they are 4-2. Seventh game of the year, Jets at home. It's got to be a win. Now you're 5-2, going to London to face Jacksonville. That's got to be a win.
Has to be.
I mean, so I got you through 8 games, 6-2 heading into your bye.
Mm.
I mean,
how different is this exercise from the last 5 years that we've done this? This is hilarious. I love it because it's all real. Go ahead.
Now after the bye, you are on the road against the Tennessee Titans. I got that as a loss. But you follow that up with a gimme, Raiders at home, layup. That will be a win. You know it. I know it.
I don't know that.
Raiders know it, and Broncos country know it.
I hope you're right.
That's a W for the Broncos. Now, following the Raiders game at home, you will be traveling to Carolina to see the Panthers. It's got to be a win. Got to be a win, right? I mean,
who's playing quarterback for the Panthers?
Exactly. We don't know, especially at that point. I mean, it's Sam Darnold. Who else did they draft? They drafted
Matt Corral.
Corral? Late? Yeah. Who's it going to be? Who knows? It's probably be Matt Corral by that point.
Yeah.
You follow up the Panthers' win with another road game, back-to-back road games here, to visit Baltimore and the Ravens on the road. I got the Ravens winning that one. Tough, tough place to play. I got that as a loss. Then you come back home.
What's the record now?
I don't know. I stopped keeping track. You're not losses. Writing them down?
I think what's the record?
Four losses in however many wins that was.
So you don't have it. So you don't. You just said he had it.
I and
he said
count.
Four one, losses two, in however three, many four, wins. You five, said, well, that was six, what eight. You were supposed to do.
Eight.
You said you had
so
it.
Eight
but you
and
don't
four.
Have
so
it.
8-4.
Okay. 8-4 at this point. That's what we got?
Yes.
Okay. Now, after the Ravens game, you are at home against the Kansas City Chiefs. The streak is broken at home. The Broncos find a way to get a W.
That's Sunday Night Football.
Beat the Chiefs at home, and they go to 9-4. Got another home game the following week against the Cardinals. I just see that as another win, Zach. And the Cardinals are a good football team. Late in the season, they collapse. That's just what they do under Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. They collapse. And I see no difference this year. I got that as a win. Now they will be 10-4. You're on the road, Rams, the following week. Tough game, obviously. I got that as a loss.
It's Christmas Day.
Now you follow that up with the game against the Chiefs on the road. That will be a loss. Now you are sitting there 10-6 with the game against the Chargers at home. And will it be flexed in? Like you had mentioned earlier, you're darn right it would be. A lot at stake. Place will be rocking. Tough, tough football game. But the Chargers is just kind of the Chargers. I'm not going to all of a sudden crown them.
They're always next year's champion.
Right. They haven't done anything. They underachieved with Anthony Lynn every single year. Brandon Staley is boy wonder, but what did he do?
Did he
make the playoffs.
Did you have them beating the Chargers on Monday Night Football the first time around?
No, I had the Chargers winning that
one. Okay, perfect.
On the road.
Perfect.
And so I got the Broncos doing what division, you know, games usually, how they unfold, winning this one at home to go to 11-6, Zach, is what my final prediction is. 11-6.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I love it.
Gosh. I don't know. You know, I look at this thing, and yeah, you can debate a few games, and we'll see how it all, you know, plays out. But, you know, I look at how the first eight games of the year. That's what I look at. And I'm saying you've got to be and you should be at least 6-2. At least 6-2. And that would be going into your bye week, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep. Yep. That's be going into your bye week and then you go on the road to Tennessee. So your first eight games, it's set up to get off to a fast, fast start. I mean, it's right there. Like it was last year for them, the first three games. This first eight games, I mean, it's there on a platter, Zach. I mean, Seahawks, Texans, 49ers, who I got them losing to the 49ers, but they could easily win that football game. At home, at the Raiders, that's Colts, Chargers, Jets, Jags. So the first two, got to be wins, Seahawks, Texans, and the last two of those eight got to be wins, Jets, Jags. So it is set up nicely for the Broncos to start fast.
I think we're going to agree on more than we disagree. There's already a couple spots. Now, I have not put any thought into this, literally any thought, and I purposefully wanted to just go through it organically on the air. Great stuff. You have the Broncos at 11-6, which is interesting because last year you had them at 10-7. So adding Russell Wilson changed it one game for you, which just shows you how drastically wrong you were a year ago. But where do we agree and disagree? You had your turn. I'm going to go through the schedule and see how close I can get to Brandon Stokely's 11-win total for the Broncos, and we'll get there next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
All right, part two of the most useless exercise of the sports calendar. And we happen to love. We go through and assign wins and losses the day, the show after that we find out the schedule. I have not put any thought into this purposefully. to go through it organically with
like
you.
Most segments that we have.
Oh,
you don't put a lot of thought into it.
Sure. So
this would be like a normal segment for you, where I put a lot of thought into mine and had it all mapped out nice and neat. You put none. Okay. Can't wait.
Okay. Okay. That's how we're going into the weekend.
Yeah. All right. Well, the bar is low for you every segment, so you're just continuing that. You do a nice job of keeping the bar low also. You've never risen it at all.
Consistent, if nothing else.
Right. Consistently bad.
If you don't mind, just keep track of my wins and losses.
Right.
All right. Here we go.
Okay.
Bronco season starts on Monday, September 12th on the road against the Seattle Seahawks. I agree with James. I think this is, from an interest standpoint, I told you yesterday, I find it fascinating that Russell Wilson's return to Seattle is going to happen in his very first game in orange and blue. So from an interest standpoint, it's 10 out of 10. But from a sense of urgency and have it be the Seahawks Super Bowl for the players and the fans and the coaches, that's going to be 10 out of 10 as well. I don't like it. I think this is a really, really close game that the Broncos eke out in their very first game with Russell Wilson by a field goal. Brandon McManus, backstretch of the fourth quarter. Broncos start 1-0 on Monday Night Football. Week 2, Davis Mills and the Houston Texans are coming in here, and they're going to get beat like a drum. The number on the game is probably going to be 8.5 or something like that. Mile High is going to be all wound up for the Russell Wilson debut. This is going to be ugly, but I think the Broncos are going to start 2-0 after that beatdown. And then you get to Week 3, their first real test of the season. Will it be Trey Lance? Will it be Jimmy Garoppolo? Is that a tough game? Yeah. You know what else is really, really tough? Coming into altitude against this roster, this quarterback, that early in the season. I have the Denver Broncos starting 3-0 after edging out the San Francisco 49ers, who will still be getting their feet under them, I believe, with a new quarterback in Trey Lance. That brings us to Week 4. It's Sunday, October 2nd, on the road against the Raiders. Stoke, unfortunately, the Broncos haven't beat the Raiders in years. Now, not quite the Kansas City stretch, but that is a really good football team with an established quarterback, an established leader. They just got the best wide receiver maybe in all of the game. They got a real defense, and I think they find a way to beat the Broncos for their first loss of the season in Las Vegas. So I got the Broncos at 3-1 going into Week 5. The Colts, new quarterback early in the season, really good roster. This is going to be a tight football game, but it's a short week, and teams who are traveling on a short week historically on Thursday night struggle. And I think that's going to be the case this time around. They play Tennessee the week before, who is a really physical football team. Then you're going to have 4 days rest and play here in Denver. I think that's a problem for Indianapolis. I got the Broncos winning. That means what are we at, 4-1 here?
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
We go to Monday Night Football Week 6 on the road against the Chargers. The whole world will be watching on ESPN. The Chargers are going to be a terrific football team. I don't know how many games they're going to win, but it's going to be in the double figures, and I think they're going to be in the playoffs after just keeping themselves in the final game this past year against the Raiders. I have that as a loss on Monday Night Football to the Chargers. And then it's a big bounce-back resounding drumming of one of my least favorite teams in professional sports, the New York Jets, who, you know, they're just, the culture is bad. Now they retooled their roster a little bit, you know, through the draft. But those are going to be young players playing in their seventh football game ever. That's a big problem for that group. I got the Broncos beating the Jets on CBS in late October. That gets us to Week 8. That game is in London. Jacksonville should not be, I can't see it. I looked at their season over-under, I think is 6. I just can't see them winning 7.
Yeah.
And there's no hook on it. So to lose your money, they got to be 7-10. I just can't see 7 wins out of that group. I think it's a big problem across the pond for Jacksonville.
Maybe they'll get relegated.
Maybe they'll get relegated.
Let's relegate them.
I like it. You got the bye week, Week 9. This gets us to the backstretch of the schedule.
So your first 8 are, you got there a little bit different, but you still have them at 6-2.
Okay, there
right
we go.
Through, and heading into their bye. I had them at 6-2. You have them at 6-2. We just have one game difference, and I have them beating the losing to the 49ers and beaten, you know, of course, because we're beaten the Raiders twice this year. So that's it.
So there's our only disagreement. Yep. I love where the bye week is. I mean, it is nearly smack dab right in the middle of the season. I think that's terrific. And they come out of the gates traveling to a good Tennessee team in the second week of November. It's one of those early 11 a.m. starts for a team that's traveling east. I don't love it. But I told you yesterday, the days of Tennessee scaring me are over. And it was 3 years ago, 3 seasons ago, they were in the AFC Championship game. A lot's changed since then. I didn't think they maximized that window. And I think that window is closing. I think
they
were
just the number one seed in the AFC last year, by the way.
And how did it go?
They were number one seed, though. So they were a good regular season football team.
They were a good regular season football team.
They were a great regular season football team.
How did it go in the playoffs?
I don't remember.
How did it go in the playoffs the year before that? They have just been underwhelming.
We're talking about regular season, not playoffs, though.
I understand. But they felt like the Miami Heat a year ago, like the least talked about one seed ever. And I don't think they're Miami Heat. Okay?
Okay.
So Broncos go on the road and beat the Titans.
All right.
Then the following week, they're at home against the Raiders, who I have them losing to in Vegas. I think they split. I think they beat the Raiders at home with a rabid crowd behind them. That gets us to week 12. It's on the road against Carolina. I don't know who's playing quarterback for Carolina. Not worried about Carolina. I think they get beat soundly by the Broncos the same way that they got beat the last time that the Broncos played Carolina when Drew Locke was a quarterback. Week 13, it's back-to-back road games. They travel to Baltimore. It's an early East Coast start, terrific roster, well-coached, former MVP quarterback. I'm just not willing to say that they're going to win that game yet, so I'll have them losing to Baltimore after back-to-back trips to the East Coast. And then you're home against Kansas City, week 14. The first game against Kansas City doesn't come until December 11th. It's Sunday Night Football. The last time Kansas City was in Denver for a primetime game, was that last year, or were they in Kansas City for that? Do you remember?
Because
it was Sunday Night Football.
But I think that was in Kansas City, I believe.
I think so, too. Let me just triple check here. There it is. It was. Okay, so in Denver this time around, I think the streak is broken. I agree with you. I think the Broncos beat Kansas City. It's time. They win week 14 in primetime and make up for Case Keenum's errant pass to Demaryius Thomas from a few years before on Monday Night Football. You get to week 15. It's the Arizona Cardinals here in Denver. Arizona, you can acknowledge a lot of good things about Arizona. They just don't scare me at all. I have them losing in a December game, late December in the cold in Colorado, that team from where people retire to.
Yeah.
I think they're in trouble. That gets us to week 16. It's Christmas Day. It's the Rams. You're on the road. I have them losing that football game. We'll see what it looks like, who's healthy, who's not by then. But right here on paper, I say they lose that game.
Okay.
That gets us to week 17. It's the new year. We're into 2023. It's January 1st. It's in Kansas City. Because Kansas City's schedule is so tough through the first half of the year, where they're the first team in NFL history for have their eight opponents to begin the year all have winning records from the year before. It's literally never happened. I think there's going to be a lot to play for Kansas City that late in the year. I think they lose in Kansas City, week 17. And then that gets us to week 18, the final game of the season. It's Los Angeles. It's home. I think it's going to be flexed into primetime. And I think the Broncos win and split with the Chargers. So I have them right down the middle, splitting with the Raiders, splitting with the Chargers, and splitting with the Chiefs for the first time in a very, very long time. Wasn't keeping track of the record. Yep. What do we got?
You have them at 12-5.
Okay.
Five losses, starting the season 6-2, and then down the stretch, finishing out 6-3. So you have them at 12-5.
Okay.
I like it. I had them at 11.
11-6.
And 6?
Yep.
And you have them at 12-5? I like it. I mean, you go through it, obviously, look, it's, you know, way early and a lot changes, injuries.
Of course.
It's crazy to try to pick games in December. We don't know what these teams are going to even look like, but I like going through this exercise, and it's a lot more fun this year. And you just look at it, and the start, to me, is everything. The first eight games. It's set up to start so fast.
It really is.
And you have to take advantage of it. You can't do worse than 5-3. That's it. That's the bottom. 5-3 through 8 games. If you're sitting there 4-4, that's a disaster. There's no chance this team should be 4-4 after these 8 games.
And really, you take a look at it, your 4 most winnable games are in those first 8 games. Now, they're all tough. It's the NFL. We get that. But playing the Drew Lock or Geno Smith-led Seattle Seahawks, Davis Mills and the Texans, Zach Wilson and the New York Jets at home, and Jacksonville in London, who is coming off, once again, the first overall pick, and just they're trying to reboot the culture and all that, and it's not even a home game, and it's a neutral site. I can tell you, I was about to say there's more Bronco fans in London because of the brand and Super Bowl stuff, but Jacksonville's actually...
That's their home away from home.
Yeah.
Like KKFN and KKFN, HD1, Longmont, Denver. I think I did win every day this week. I feel like the Avs. It's a sweep. It's a sweep. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. The big sweep. Get the broom out, baby. Get it out, Zach. Sweep, sweep. Sweep, sweep. Great week for me. Great week for me. But how you feeling?
Not good.
You don't look good.
Not good.
You don't look good. You look paler than normal.
Because it wasn't even that great of a week for you.
No.
No, it wasn't.
No,
and then
it wasn't.
There you were just at the finish line falling forward.
Right.
And it's like,
that's the way I felt too. It wasn't a great week for me, but I just, somehow you dropped the ball every time. Like you had it 2 or 3 times court and you just lost focus. I don't know how to explain it. But when you look at those 4 games, those have got to be wins. That's 4 wins right there. And now you look at the other 4 games and you're saying, okay. I mean, you know, 49ers, Raiders, Colts, Chargers. I mean, you got to at least get one of those, right? I mean, you got to at least get one of them. And that's 5-3 right there.
Right.
So that's the bare minimum for me.
I agree with you.
After 8 games,
I agree with you.
You have to at least be 5-3 or it's a complete disaster.
It feels like us talking about the first 3 games of the year this past year. We said the absolute floor is 2-1.
Yep.
You can't, any other answer is just the wrong one. It ended up being 3-0 and not even really mattering. But those are your 4 most winnable games on your schedule, and they're 4 of the first 8 games of the year. Your toughest games on the schedule are at Kansas City. That's not till week 17. At the Los Angeles Rams. That's not till week 16. I mean, you're playing the Ravens on the road. Not ideal, right? That's not till week 13. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think you're spot on, Stoke. I think you're spot on.
It's set up to get off to a super, super fast start. Which, you know, obviously you got a first-year head coach here. But with Russell Wilson, and, you know, sometimes it takes time. We know about that, right? We know about it taking some time sometimes. I mean, we saw it with Peyton.
Sure.
And how we started that year. But, man, this thing is set up to get off to a super, super fast start. And then you got, the more difficult part of your schedule is there towards the end. But that's when you should be playing your best football.
Right.
So this thing couldn't have set up nicer for the Denver Broncos. It really couldn't have.
I do think, fellas, we need to look at the way they started with Peyton Manning, though, a little different, right? There's a difference between his first few games with the Broncos and Russell Wilson's first few games. Peyton Manning was coming off of not playing for a year and 4 neck surgeries. Like, Russell Wilson, I know he had the finger injury last year and missed some games, but he played in the season finale a year ago on January 4th or whatever the heck it was. He's had a normal offseason. Peyton Manning wasn't just moving to a new team and learning a new offense, getting used to new teammates. He hadn't played in almost 2 calendar years. It had been like 20 months or something like that since he'd thrown a football.
Yeah.
So I think that adds a lot more rust to it. Plus, he was learning to play the position differently, right? Like, he was a different player. He kind of had to reteach himself how to throw the ball after the surgeries than what he was before. So that takes it. And the fact that he was able to kind of get it going after just 5 weeks is miraculous. But it does make it a little bit different than what we're looking at here. I think that's giving Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson a built-in excuse if they struggle early. There will be some bumps. But I don't think 2-3 out of the gate would be excusable by any means.
Well, I think that you didn't acknowledge one factor that could also be a contributing factor into why you could forecast fairly that the Broncos could start a little bit slow. Is you only kept it to Russell Wilson. We got a first-time head coach. Yep. We got a first-time OC and a first-time DC. And there, it takes time to build rhythm, continuity, and there's going to be hard lessons learned on the job. Like,
I was pretty bad at my job my first year or two. Every job I've ever had, I was bad, right? And that's true of all of us. So, you know, Nathaniel Hackett is going to have his moments where he calls his timeouts too early and we're going to say, oh, it's Vic Fangio all over again, right? He's going to have those moments. He'll cost the Broncos a game or two at some point.
Oh, my gosh. He better not.
Yeah, he will.
He better not. No.
James, no, I'll stop
how
that.
Many
just
games
stop
did,
that. No, that,
games,
just stop that. Just stop that, dude. That, I mean, that's crazy minute. Talk. That is what happens. The only coach that I can only think of two. I can think of two coaches that started as young guys without any major hiccups.
Matt LaFleur.
Yes.
And
Sean McVay.
Yes.
Okay.
They're all recent. That's it. I mean, outside of that, it's human nature that it takes you a little bit of time to be good at your job.
Well, I was going to bring up when you said, hey, he's going to cost him a couple of games. It was, hey, well, how many games did Matt LaFleur cost the Packers in his first year? Now, I don't remember every game from that 16-game season, but they were 13-3. So
he's the most winningest coach in the first four years, whatever it's been.
Three. They were 13-3 three straight years.
Okay. We can't have free passes in May that we're all ready to give out in September, October.
Well, no. I don't think it's a free pass. I think it's looking at a brand new situation with a smidgen of wisdom.
It's just reality.
He's never done the job before. And then the guys to the left and right of him that he needs the most have never done their job either. And coaching matters. It's really important.
And it may be even bigger than all of that. I mean, you know, head coach, okay, it's hard to screw up the game too much with the timeouts, right? So maybe Nathaniel Hackett doesn't cost you a game where you feel it based off his decision. But it might cost you a game based off of rhythm and chemistry with Russell Wilson. That's going to take some time. It takes a little bit of time to figure out that quarterback, head coach, and offensive coordinator relationship.
I understand where you're coming from. I just think that's what the offseason, that's what training camp, that's what preseason's for. They go down there and they do the dress rehearsal so the coaches get used to the headsets and all that stuff. Like, you got to come out week one, no excuses. No excuses.
Well, here's the thing. We're there every day in training camp. It resembles football, but, like, it ain't what it is on game day.
It's hard to replicate all the different situations that pop up over the course of a football game. And for coaches, that's not something like you can't go on Madden and just replicate all the situations that pop up. But I'll say to James's point, hey, man, I got the Broncos going 2 of 3 of their first three games.
I got
a win against Seattle. I got a win against Houston. I got a loss against San Francisco. And quite frankly, that's a winnable football game.
Totally.
Because it's at home.
Right.
And if Trey Lance is playing, well, Lord knows what that's going to look like. So, I figured they're going to lose at least one out of their first three. But I got them off to a pretty dang good start.
I have them 3-0 and losing week 4 to the Raiders.
I think
that, you know, my partner, my co-host, is just so people are like are chirping at me like, oh, you're pumping up the Raiders. Like, no, I just want to put respect on their name. This is a double digit playoff team with an established franchise quarterback, maybe the best receiver in the sport. Yeah. Josh McDaniels didn't forget how to coach football. Might have, you know, forgot how to manage people here, but I think there's a grand assumption here in Denver that the Broncos just are automatically better than the Raiders, and I'm not going there yet.
So did you go down the list and go win-loss on every single game?
We did. That's how we finished the show.
I did that last night. We'll go through it today. We'll do all of that, of course. But it's funny. I don't know if it worked out for you guys the same way it did for me. I thought before I even saw the schedule, before I knew any of it, I said, look, they're going to be about a wild card team. That's about what they're going to be. And then lo and behold, you do the schedule, and it kind of works out that way, right? I was talking to Raj about this last night, actually. And you know, of course you go through it and you say win or loss versus a specific team, but there's going to be a surprise loss. There's going to be a surprise win.
Always.
It's more or less like, what do you think the football team is? Do you think they're an AFC West championship? Do you think that they're capable of limping in as a wild card team? Or do you think they're bad, right? I think they're about a wild card team, and lo and behold, that's the way it worked out. I didn't try to make it work out that way. That's just the way it worked out. Now, I won't get all the games right, but I think the record will be pretty close.
Yeah, I like it. I'm sorry, James.
So a wild card team's 9-10 wins, right?
I think it's like 10.
It might have to be 10 because of the AFC.
Yeah, because Miami missed it a couple of years ago with 10 wins.
Yeah, two years ago they're 10
now,
and 6.
And now with the 17 games.
Yeah.
Have to be 10.
A 10-win team? So to be considered an AFC West contender in your mind, you're what, 12 plus?
12.
Yeah. I think you got to win. Well, I don't know about that. I think 11 could win the division. Did you guys see the story on Kansas City and their schedule?
No.
It's the first of its kind in NFL history. The first 8 games of the season, they are playing all winning teams from a year ago, there literally is not a precedent for that. If you pull up their, dude, this is their first eight games of the year on the road at Arizona, hosting the Chargers on a short week, Thursday Night Football. So their season starts on a short week. On the road against the Colts, on the road against Tom Brady and the Bucks, hosting the Raiders, the Buffalo Bills, and on the road against the San Francisco 49ers, and home against the Tennessee Titans.
Wow. Okay.
There is no weeks, like, there is no cookie cutter. They could, don't forget how they started last year.
That does change my opinion a little bit. Maybe that puts a little bit more emphasis on the priority of this year. It really might. I mean, you got to take down the Chiefs. And, you know, they've historically had bad starts to the beginning of their season, and then they turn it on late in the year.
Yep.
That's a hell of a schedule. So there might be an opportunity to be had here. You just can't cannibalize yourselves amongst the Chargers and the Raiders. And best guess is that I would imagine all three of those teams, at some point, they're going to split one with one another.
Sure.
So, you know, you end up with 11, maybe 12 wins. Maybe you're right, Zach. Maybe if the Chiefs really struggle in the early parts of the season, maybe 11 can get it done for the AFC West.
I think it's very likely that the Broncos, by their bye week, could be in sole control of how they finish, considering four of their first eight opponents, considering what it looks like for Kansas City. Guys, the team that we're not talking about enough, and I just, again, I'm going to get labeled this or that, the Chargers could win the division.
Of course they could.
The Chargers, like, look at what they added to a team that was already right there to arguably the one of the great starts to a career at the quarterback position that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Herbert entered the league the greatest rookie season of all time at the quarterback position and then followed up by throwing over 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. That group puts as much fear into me. When we talk about, like, who strikes fear into you? The Chargers are always next year's champions. I got it.
I'm not convinced. I was. I loved him. And then as the year went on, you just see, gosh, that guy, he just made some dumb decisions. Some really, really bad decisions at the end of the year.
But now he did, and who would refute that? But now, like, it's the learning curve.
Yeah.
Like, now you're another year without and those mistakes is, under your belt.
He's just a stats guy. He's an analytics guy, and he's going to trust what the analytics tell him to do.
I think every team in the AFC West is going to go 3-3 against each other, right? Just operate under the assumption that they all split somehow with each other. Then it becomes, in the other 11 games, who can go 8-3? Can the Broncos go 8-3 in their 11 non-divisional games? I think they can, and then I think you win the AFC West if you do that. 8-3 is a pretty good stretch in 11 non-divisional games.
It is, but I agree with you. I have them doing just that. I am splitting with Kansas City, splitting with the Raiders, splitting with the Chargers. And then can you beat the teams like the Colts and the,
Jaguars you got?
Well,
they got a couple of bad breaks, though, because Seattle and Jacksonville, that's two you should just put down as W's. Now, I think they'd still win them, but you got to go to Seattle week one. Makes it tougher. Doesn't make it impossible, but it makes it tougher than playing there week 12. And you got to go to London for Jacksonville. Makes that significantly tougher than going down to Jacksonville and playing them.
London's definitely a major wild card. There's no question.
Yeah. It makes it a bit of a coin flip game that should have been an 80% chance of a Broncos win.
They're
going to
beat the brains into the Jags, though. I'm not worried about that.
I'm not either. But you look at the toughest games of the Broncos schedule comes after their bye week in week 9, where it's at Baltimore, Tennessee, at the Kansas City Chiefs, the Cardinals.
Perfect. Couldn't ask for anything better.
Exactly. The way it fell, you should have your legs under you by that point.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go and enjoy my Friday. You guys go do your thing, but I do have to call out James on the way out here.
Oh, good. I love this. Yeah.
I texted you this yesterday.
Yeah.
Last week, I was comparing the Nikola Jokic MVP voting. I said, don't expect it to be a Reagan in 84 landslide like it was a year ago. I went on the morning show, different audience. I said, expect hanging chads in Florida, not Reagan in 84. And then he comes on the air yesterday and said, hey, this wasn't Reagan in 84. I said, whoa, James,
wait,
can't steal my analogy like that.
I think you need to go back and figure where you got this analogy from, because in this room, there's one of us that watched the election results that night, and that's the guy that's
here. But that's what you texted me back, but you didn't say you heard me. Challenge flags.
That sounds suspect.
I love the history of politics.
If you said it first, you know what he would have said? I said it first.
Exactly. He said, no, I watched it.
He wouldn't have said I was alive.
All right.
I said it.
How many states did Walter Mondale win that
election?
Oh,
shut your mouth.
James.
Just shut your face.
One. See, this is why he's tough to play two-hand touch with in a phone booth, because they'll never let you ring him in.
He won his home state of Minnesota. That was it. All right.
Have fun, fellas.
Appreciate it. Calling me out on your way out.
Always. Perfect.
Heading
I
into the weekend.
I got to keep you accountable.
So you did go through, Tyler, and go game by game.
Yep.
Put together how you think this team is going to fare.
Of course.
I did as well. It is, and I heard Stokely and Zach doing it, and they called it kind of the silliest thing that you do on the sports calendar.
Well, it's obligatory.
I totally agree, but it is obligatory. You have to do it.
It's fun. It's a little bit silly, but it's fun.
Nobody's going to hold us to it, but it's kind of fun to map it out, see how we think it's going to shake out. We will do that. We will break down the schedule game by game, give our predictions coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.